I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for June 9th, 2009. I am going to open a work session on SB 628A. Could the committee administrator please give a brief overview of the bill and the Dash 9 amendments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 628A establishes foreclosure mediation program and specifies procedures for mediation, delineates contents required first and second notices of foreclosure sale and right to mediation and procedure if grantor fails to receive notice, accepts from certain notice requirements property secured by a mortgage that a government agency holds for a loan funded through a government program, requires a trustee attest to mailing a required notice and refund affidavit to county where property is located, prescribes foreclosures, settlement procedures between beneficiary and grantor, incorporates certain provisions of federal plans relating to loan modifications and foreclosures, defines qualified mediator, grants Department of Consumer Business Services certain rulemaking authority, sunsets provisions related to mediation on January 2nd, 2014, declares emergency as effective upon passage. The Dash A9 amendments in your packet revises notice required to be delivered to grantor upon notice of default on residential trust deed, specifies that notice include information pertaining to loan modification procedures, requires mortgage modification request form to be delivered to grantor with notice, specifies contents of modification request form, requires beneficiary to evaluate information timely provided by grantor, process mediation request form good faith and respond to grantor within 30 days of receipt, prohibits foreclosure sale until all response to grantor's modification request, outline procedures if grantor timely requests mediation with beneficiary, requires the beneficiary or beneficiary's agent meeting with grantor of authority to modify loan, requires affidavit describing compliance with procedures, requires trustee to record affidavits and copy the Department of Consumer and Business Services before conducting property sales, repeals requirements to send affidavit, copy to department 1 year after effective date of act, exempts mortgages that beneficiary in good faith determines not eligible for loan modification, establishes sunset date for provisions regarding loan modification, establishes that measure does not apply to property secured by trustee that government agency holds for loan funded through government program, requires the Department of Justice to use procedures, proceeds from settlement with Countrywide Financial Corporation to make grants to nonprofit entities providing foreclosure relief services unless sufficient funding otherwise becomes available, and declares emergency as effective upon passage.
Okay.
I think you should say that again.
We don't have the Dash 10s, right?
I have the Dash 10s.
Okay.
I have an explanation of the Dash 10 if you would like to have it distributed.
It is the intent of the chair to move the Dash 9s. I would like the Dash 10s explained for the record, though, because it's my hope that parties will still continue to work together to find some resolution to this issue. They're so close that it would be extremely unfortunate that this program that does have funding available will not go forward unless parties can come into agreement. But I need to move it out of this committee today because as this committee is starting to close down, so is Ways and Means, and that's where this bill has to go.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash A10 removes requirement that trustees send copy of affidavit to Department of Consumer and Business Services before conducting trustee's sale, adds provision requiring nonprofit entity receiving grant to report to department results of foreclosure relief services provided, and makes additional technical changes.
Okay. And since we're in work session, do we have any questions? I will open it up to that to either Senator Bonamici or I think Mr. Cosgrove is acting as the lead party on the other discussions. Any questions? I said if there are any questions from the committee, so.
No.
No. Okay. I'll move the Dash. Will you have a motion to move the Dash 9s?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 628A.
Okay. The Dash 9s have been moved to adopt to SB 628A. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing no objection, motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 628A as amended with the due pass recommendation and recommending referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Senator Metzger has moved 628A as amended with due pass recommendation with subsequent referral to the full Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion? Any for discussion? It is still my hope that the parties will work together because ultimately I hope that this program can go into effect. And I would ask actually both sides to move, because ultimately I think the most important thing is that the people that will be funded by this, that will be out there to assist people, is the most important aspect of this bill. Any of the other aspects, I'm hoping that people will move from both sides on. Okay. Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion passes. Now, we're going to go 2518 and back to 597. I will open a work session on 2518. Okay, can you give a brief overview and talk to us about the amendments that are before us? And I believe Gina is here. Are you here?
Yeah.
You're here to answer a question Senator Atkinson had about the bill. So if you'll give the overview and
yes.
Then we'll...
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2518A, for the purposes of government ethics regulation, exempts from the definition of gift sums paid to public school employees for expenses for accompanying students on educational trips, adds conference to category of meetings which public official can attend that is excluded from gift definition, adds program materials to list of materials, publications, and subscriptions excluded from the definition of gift, removes domestic partner from definition of relative for purpose of disclosure of potential conflicts of interest, repeals provisions specifying penalties and procedures when candidate or public official refuses to file a statement of economic interest, declares emergency, takes effect upon passage. You'll find the dash A11, 12, and 13 amendments in your packet. The dash A11 deletes the receives less than 5% of its funding from for-profit organizations condition on nonprofit organization when expenses paid by that nonprofit organization are considered not to be gifts. The dash A12 resolves conflicts with Senate Bill 30. The dash A13 amendment changes prohibition on participation in contracts from 2 years after person held position to 2 years after authorization of the contract. We do have a no revenue on all three amendments and no fiscal impact on all three amendments.
Okay. Senator Atkinson, I think Legislative Council is aware of your question, and I think the question was relative to why the language relative to domestic partnerships was deleted.
The language is deleted, but the effect is not to make the ethics laws not apply to domestic partners. It actually doesn't. The ethics laws will still apply to the domestic partners of public officials. The reason being that the language of House Bill 2007 from 2007 grants any privilege, immunity, right, benefit, or responsibility that's imposed by virtue of being somebody's spouse onto domestic partners as well. So to be consistent across all statutes, we're trying to take those references out just to be consistent, so we don't have some places that say domestic partners and some places that don't, to infer that the places they don't, it doesn't mean they apply. So it doesn't actually, the intent of that removal is not to change the application of the law to them. It just is to be consistent across statutes.
Okay. We are on a work session for 2518A. Do we have a motion on the dash 11 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash A11 amendments to House Bill 2518.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the A11 amendments? Any objection to the A11 amendments? Hearing none, motion passes. Do I have a motion on the dash 12 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, since this is a near conflict resolution with SB 30, I move the dash A12 amendments.
Okay, the dash A12 amendments.
To House Bill 2518.
The dash A12 amendments have been moved to 2518. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Is there a motion on the dash 13 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 13 amendments. And Mr. Chairman, just could I have just a few second discussion on that motion?
Yes, the dash 13 amendments have been moved to 2518. Discussion, Senator Farioli.
Yeah, just a quick recap by the committee staffer on A13.
Yes, thank you. The dash A13 amendments changes prohibition on participation in public contracts from 2 years after person held position to 2 years after authorization of the contract.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objection to them? Seeing none, motion passes. Do I have a motion on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 2518 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. HB 2518 as amended, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. HB 2518 as amended has been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. I will carry it. Now I will open up a work session on SB 597. Could the committee administrator give a brief overview and also an overview of the Dash 4 and Dash 5 amendments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 597 requires members of governing body of certain non-governmental entities to file statements of economic interest with Oregon Government Ethics Commission, allows Secretary of State to audit records and refunds collected through public purpose charge and paid to non-governmental entity. The Dash 5 amendments actually will replace the measure and will require officers and directors of non-governmental entities who receive public purpose funds to file a statement of economic interest with the Public Utilities Commission, and also declare actual and potential conflicts of interest at regular meetings of non-governmental entities' board meetings, requires annual independent audits of the entity's financial statements, requires filing with the PUC annually the entity's budget, action plan, quarterly and annual reports, and if a board member of a non-governmental entity who receives public purpose charges fails to comply with reporting requirements, they are subject to removal from the board by the PUC. The Dash 4 amendments, if we choose to adopt the Dash 5 amendments, will not be needed. And we just received this measure, so we do this amendment, so we do not have the revenue or the fiscal impact on it.
Okay. We will start off in this work session on the Dash 4 amendments, so that we do have fiscal and revenue impacts.
We don't need it. We'd have to receive from it.
Okay. I move.
We won't need the Dash 4 if we do the Dash 5.
Oh, okay.
Because it's that relates, Mr. Chair, to the SEI, and since we're now making a new SEI from the PUC,
okay,
it wouldn't be applicable.
Okay. If so we you do have the Dash a motion. 5. You have a motion.
I would move the Dash A5 amendment to House Senate Bill 597.
Mr. Chair,
can I point of order here?
Oh, okay.
Do we have to rescind the Dash 4?
Oh, we did that already.
We did that already.
I'm sorry then, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Did you indicate that you did not have the fiscal on the Dash 5?
Correct.
So that would require a rule suspension.
A rule suspension before we move the bill out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, is there any characterization that we can do about potential cost on this?
I could make a suggestion where I think it is. What this does, Senator, is there'll be no cost to the state at all, because now it's going to be the PUC and with their ratepayer dollars, whatever dollars that would be, to administer the whatever work they actually have to do. I mean, in creating their statement of economic interest for the energy just people. Obviously, I would imagine they would mirror the one that we have. But it would not be any funds from our purposes that would do that.
Given that I would need the ability to suspend the rules, I'll be fine with doing the Dash 5 and then seeing where we are in terms of suspending the rules, if that's okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Dash 5 amendments.
Okay. We probably do need to move to remove the Dash 4s.
Mr. Chairman,
here.
As you wish, move to remove the Dash 4 amendments, whereby whereby Senate Bill 597 was amended.
Okay. It has been moved. Senator Ferrioli moves to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 4 amendments.
Oh, yes. Mr. Chairman, I need to suspend the rules to reconsider, do we not?
We'll see it up in a work session.
We're already in work session, so.
And does it need a real suspension to reconsider?
No.
Mr. Chairman, I'll restate my motion. I move we reconsider the vote by which the Dash 4 amendments were adopted.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli has moved to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 4 amendments. Is there any discussion?
I think it needed a real suspension.
I'm not going to move out of committee.
Yeah, we're not moving.
Not if it hadn't moved out of committee.
So,
Yeah, actually, normally this reconsideration would occur after a vote failure or...
Oh, right.
Yeah, but we're not doing that.
We haven't even dropped the bill.
All right, so fine.
Okay, so is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. Now...
Now we can move the dash
amendments. Now, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the dash 5 amendments to 597.
Senator Farioli has moved the dash 5 amendments. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. Motion passes. Now, before I can move the bill out of the committee, I would have to have a motion to suspend, and I don't think... Are we at a point yet?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have no reason to suspect there's a large fiscal on this, and as my good colleague from Hood River indicated, likely this would not be tax dollars that are expended to move this good purpose forward, but it would be more comforting to have some notion of what the cost will be.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farioli, we will have to get a fiscal statement and a revenue statement before we can officially drop the bill with the Secretary of Senate's office, and so if we get back a fiscal statement that is more than a minimal or a no fiscal, we can reconsider the bill and before we officially move it to the Secretary of Senate's office.
Mr. Chairman, how does that comport with your agenda for the committee?
Mr. Vice Chair, I would agree to that stipulation. And I think the chief advocate behind you would agree to that, too.
Mr. Chairman, so what you're suggesting is that we would...
We move to suspend the rules so that we can send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Should the fiscal come back that is something more than minimal, then I will agree that I will entertain a motion, if you so wish to do so at that time, to reconsider the motion by which we sent it to the floor.
Mr. Chairman, then I move to suspend the rules so that we could, for the purpose of voting on Senate Bill 597,
okay, Senator
without the fiscal revenue impact statement being available.
Senator Farioli has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on SB 597 without the fiscal impact statement and revenue statement being available for review. Any discussion?
Discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
Having received your assurance that if the fiscal impact statement is more than minimal, that you would be willing to move the bill back to the committee and reconsider.
Yeah.
In view of the fact that a number of members on both sides of the aisle believe that this is a wonderful public purpose, I would not want to impede its forward motion.
And I would tell you, Senator Farioli, by making you that offer, I would also be telling you that I would be voting in the affirmative for that reconsideration.
I assume that, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the assertion.
Okay. Okay, is there
any objections?
Seeing none, motion passes. Do we have a motion on the main bill, now as amended?
What's your pleasure for the motion, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Farioli to move it to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farioli has moved SB 597 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. We have had some discussions about this. I think this provides more transparency to the Energy Trust. It's a little different version that I had, which was using the State Ethics Commission, but it does still require an SEI. Also public disclosure of conflicts of interest, only this time it will be governed by the Public Utility Commission. There are a few extra things in here that are actually better. Additions that were not in the original bill, which puts an ex officio member of the commission to serve for filing board vacancies, because currently the Energy Trust is a self-appointing board. It also, in addition to the disclosures, the independent audit, and file the entity's budget and reports, and at least 5 years an independent management review, I think all that additional transparency and are good additions to the measure.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Further discussion, the public purpose charges that have accrued as a result of ORS 757.612 have been an issue for the cooperatives and the small public power entities in Oregon for some time, and I think this is an opportunity for us to establish a transparency and accountability in that public purpose charge, and adding the folks that are in control of the decisions that are made that sometimes involve hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to the requirements to file under the public disclosure laws of Oregon, I think is a step in the right direction. So, again, I and many other members support this public policy.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Okay, any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the motion passes. Senator Metzger, will you carry?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to go actually to House Bill 3232 first. That bill we will be moving today, but I am going to come back to 3004. That bill, we are still waiting on another amendment. So, but I will come back for a public hearing to that. So 3232, can you give a brief overview? And let's see if we have anyone signed up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3232A modifies provisions relating to administration and regulation of boards, councils, and programs for which the Oregon Health Licensing Agency is responsible, increases term of office of certain board and council members from 3 to 4 years, eliminates need for audiologists to hold separate license to dispense hearing aids, increases number of members of the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery from 7 to 8 by adding a public member, comes to you from the House floor on a 5703 vote and from the House Rules Committee on a 701 vote. There's a no revenue and a minimal impact, fiscal impact.
Okay. No Mr. impact. DeForest, if you would begin at your leisure.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on 3232B. The committee administrator has done a fine job of summarizing the bill, so I won't take your time and I will not impede its progress. This is a lengthy bill. The majority of the length is due to harmonizing 10 sets of statutes, that is the 10 boards and councils that we serve, makes them more uniform, allows the agency to operate more efficiently using that harmonized language. It does add a public member to the Board of Midwifery, ensuring that we have at least one public member for each of the boards and councils. It provides that the boards and council members serve at the pleasure of the governor. It provides for a certification program within the agency for each of the boards and councils that we serve, and this is important, especially in the area of cosmetology, that is esthetology specifically, full-body skin care, where we're trying to keep up with technology that's out there and available and advertised on infomercials. Customers call up their estheticians, want the latest laser hair removal technology, and we lack the ability to certify our licensees quickly without legislation. Adding this certification program allows us to do that by rule and keep up with technology and ensure public safety. This also eliminates dual oversight from our hearing aids agency or our hearing aids council over the audiologists and certain physicians. That is, these audiologists and physicians no longer will need to carry two licenses, thereby saving them some money. There's a $37,000 revenue impact to us. There is no fiscal impact on the expenditure side, and this comes with the support of the audiologists and the physicians.
Sorry. Don't take them away for too long.
And finally, we've been working with the hearing aid specialist to postpone establishment of a two-year program, training program. The agency had entered into an agreement with the hearing aid specialists. However, the language of this bill did not accurately reflect that agreement, and the agency would like to take a couple of more years and make sure that we get it right before we implement and ensure that the hearing aid specialists are being best served. And with that, Mr. Chair, I am here for your leisure.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. DeForest? Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Is the world going to stop turning if this bill isn't passed?
Chair Devlin, Senator Atkinson, probably not. However, there will be a certain population out there that may want some specialized health care, and they would just delay that for a bit.
The delay in getting certified by the state to get it done. It wouldn't actually delay them in getting it done.
Chair Devlin, Senator Atkinson, perhaps you're right, yes.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much. Ms. Ingram?
I want some labor. Don't get me started.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Genoa Ingram, Oregon Academy of Audiology. I, too, will be very, very brief. We've waited a very long time for this bill. I just want to make sure that it's on the record. There was some discussion between the Department of Justice and Legislative Council as to whether the bill adequately removed audiologists from the purview of the health licensing agency, and we believe that the bill does accomplish that. It's the belt and suspenders approach. We just want to make sure that it is on the record that that is our intent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any questions for Ms. Ingram?
Only a question, Mr. Chairman. It's only obliquely related to this issue.
Okay, that's fine.
I just wondered if the proponents understand that because these folks have licenses, that the Department of Revenue will be data mining the income tax filings to find out if any of them might have a 3-year or more delinquency and haven't entered into a plan to cure that delinquency. And if they have not, their licenses will be suspended.
Mr. Chair, that did come up, and it's not an issue with the audiologist specifically.
Mr. Chairman, I think it ought to be an issue for everyone who has a license in the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Farrell, do I need to get...
No, not at all. Yeah.
Okay. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3232. And open a work session. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, move House Bill 3232 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. It has been Senator Farrioli has moved House Bill 3232 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. I will assign a carrier on this later. I'm probably going to see if somebody not on the committee wants to carry it.
Good idea.
Now we're going to open a hearing. This is our last item for today, House Bill 3004B, and we have one person to testify, and we are waiting on an amendment to this bill. Can you, Committee Administrator, give a brief overview, and Ms. Cummins, could you come forward?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3004 provides that foreclosure and sale by trustee of residential property prohibits further action for deficiency against mortgagor, grantor, or other specified obligator on any additional trust deed for the property, provides exceptions, expands debt protection to include action against homeowner for debt owed to beneficiary in the residential trust deed that was subject to foreclosure, that was incurred to secure the residential trust deed, and that other debt is incurred to finance a portion of this purchase price of the foreclosed property, requires trustee to provide amended notice of sale upon registered or certified request by any member of the Oregon Bar Association, declares emergency is effective upon passage, comes to you on a House floor vote of 51 with 6 no's and 3 excused.
Okay. Ms. Cummins, if you'd come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jane Cummins. I live here in Salem, Oregon. My name is on the original bill, and I requested this because of a situation that my daughter and her family found her in. It's a situation that's very similar to millions of Americans across the country, and that is that they bought a house when they thought that they were financially secure. And then one of them lost their jobs. They tried to contact their lender, in this case, First Franklin. First Franklin, as some of you know, was one of the most aggressive of the subprime mortgage lenders, and they have thousands of people that they have loaned to that have been in similar circumstances. That is, they could not get any remedy from them nor contact them. So my daughter and her family decided to walk away from the home when they realized that they couldn't reach them and couldn't do anything about it. They, to their dismay, discovered after that because of a loophole that was created in the 1990s in Oregon's Trust Deed Act, they still owe on the house. Let me explain. Oregon's Trust Deed Act, as I understand it, was passed in the late 50s, and it was what was termed as a pro-lender bill because the right of redemption was eliminated for the homeowner. And also, the lender could avoid the court costs of going through a judicial procedure. Included in that, though, was protection for the homeowner, and that is that once the deed was foreclosed on, that the borrower who lost the house would not also lose more money. However, in an appeals court case in the 1990s, in a split decision, it was determined that if there was a second note, then the lender could go after the borrower even after the borrower had lost the house. The presiding judge, who was the dissenter in the case, said that the majority opinion was absurd and unreasonable. And in 2000, the federal court recognized the deficiency in Oregon's Trustee Act and noted that the preservation of a cause of action creates a loophole for shrewd creditors. And indeed, that's exactly what's happened. And so now there is no protection for Oregon homeowners under ORS 86770, Section 2. Especially since most homes in Oregon now are purchased using trust deeds. So my intent was to give something to homeowners, because as I have followed some of the issues as the housing bubble has burst across the country, I think we all see that it's the banks and lenders that are getting bailed out while homeowners are getting thrown out. And with this terrible loophole in Oregon's Trust Deed Act, there are families who, once they have lost their house, are facing further devastation and are being ruined. As the bill has been developed and as you see it now in the B and Gross copy, it is a narrowing of what I had intended to do. My belief is that homeowners need to have the protection that was the intent of the original Trust Deed Act. And I understand and recognize that the market has changed in that notes now are often sold off. And so the bill has been narrowed to state that this applies when the original lender still holds both notes. I don't think the homeowner knows or should be obligated just because the market has changed. I mean, they have, in the original transaction, a lender says, no, we can get you into this house, and this is what happened in the early 2000s. We can get you into the house. We'll just write you two notes. You don't have to put anything down. We'll include closing costs. And, yes, there were a lot of Americans who were too trusting, but there were also a lot of Americans who dreamed of getting into a house, and so they got into the house that way. And in this terrible economic downturn, there's very little that's being done to help the homeowner. So I believe that Oregon ought to pass the more narrowly restricted bill, but also take a look during the interim at several things in the Trust Deed Act. There are some wonderful programs that are going on around the country. For instance, in Massachusetts, where foreclosures have numbered in the thousands too, and people were being evicted after foreclosure, there was an organization with a lot of attorneys who thought that, well, with the value of the houses going down, there are a lot of people who have been foreclosed on and face eviction who could afford a house at a real market value today. And so why not keep them in the house? In fact, many of these families could afford a house with a 30-year fixed mortgage, go back to the system that worked for everyone. And so what they have found, that the people who are going through that program, 90 to 95% of them are not being evicted from their homes. Now, of course, under Oregon's Trust Deed Act, as I understand it, the homeowner cannot get the house back in any way, shape, or form. But I think that we owe it to homeowners and we owe it to our neighborhoods and communities and even the state's economy to take a look in this severe economic crisis. Do we need to look at the regulations that we have and make them work for our homeowners and our communities in better fashion? Now, the amendments that I saw just a few minutes ago, the dash B14s, I know that Representative Clem was looking at them too. I am not a lawyer, so I need some time to look at this, probably more so than a quick perusal. But I would strongly object to, on page 2 of the dash B14's the last suggestion that reads in line 30, delete before. The bill has already been narrowed enough. There's something lacking that I thought was in here, and I think Representative Clem thought was lacking, but I would oppose anything that further narrows the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Cummins?
Yes,
Senator Sherman.
I need some technical advice on trust deeds. I was under the impression that a deficiency judgment was not allowed on a trust deed. Is that correct?
I think we would need to get someone here. It's my intent when we get the amendment back to have legislative counsel here. So when we bring this bill back, so
if I may, yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Farioli, I have been tapped on the shoulder here in the Capitol building when this bill is up and told by lawyers that you can't, when they were in lawsuit, you can't go and get a take action against a deficiency in on a trustee once it's been taken and foreclosed on. And I said, well, you may have thought that, but the appeals court in a split decision decided otherwise. So while there are a lot of folks, and I understand even some lenders were unaware of this, if you thought that you could foreclose and take a house, you still have action if you wrote a second note. It's just that the way if you read the language in the original act, it certainly says that that further action is precluded, but it was written at a time when people didn't foresee multiple notes and 80-20s and the housing bubbles such as we saw in the early 2000s.
Senator Farioli, would you want to see if either of the two gentlemen sitting to our left wanted to comment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we don't need to prolong the hearing with Primer on trustees and notes, but,
okay.
But when we do recontemplate the bill, I'd like to know a little more about the under what circumstances a deficiency judgment can be offered and whether or not trust deeds can be foreclosed, leaving a remainder, a deficiency to be actionable. And I guess just to get a handle on the problem that we're attempting to solve here.
Okay. When the bill comes back, I will ensure that the legislative council is here also. And also, I believe, probably Mr. Cosgrove and Mr. Martinez will probably be both back here also, as well as Ms. Cummins, perhaps.
If I can.
Okay. Thank you. I will close the public hearing. That concludes our business for today. We will be back tomorrow. I just wanted to let, since there's 3 out of 5 of us here, know that when this committee completes its normal business, although we'll probably still be open at the request of the presiding officer, we'll probably start to do some confirmation hearings. But I wanted to put those off until we actually got bills done.
I thought for a moment, Mr. Chairman, you said that when we concluded our normal business, we would undertake abnormal business.
No. With that, we're adjourned.